my reputation is riding on this, and that's worth a lot. Exactly. Right. Fuck right. you. Yes. If this doesn't work out for you, you fuck off back to your studio right. pals and dive back into that cultural genocide you guys are perpetrating. You know, a douchebag's born every minute. That was P.T. Barnum's premise when he invented the circus, and nothing much has changed. And you guys know that if you crank out any toxic piece of crap, people will line up and pay to see it. But long after you're gone, I'm going to be on that stage, earning my living, bearing my soul, wrestling with complex human emotions.
Right.
That's what we do.
Oh, so that is that what tonight was about? You wrestling with complex emotions?
Tonight was just about seeing if it's even alive, seeing if it can bleed. No, this isn't the backlot rigging. This is New York City. This is how we do things.
We're the School of Rock.
I'm the Rocketeer.
The Rock of who?
Well, it's called Tron.
It's called a third man.
It's called the Kiss of the Dragon.
Kiss my ass!
He was known as the Glimmer Man.
Looking for the army of the 12 monkeys.
We got a Black Hawk down, we got a Black Hawk down.
He say you brave runner.
Tell him I'm eating.
These drug cartels represent a clear and present danger.
And this year's Miss Congeniality.
I'd like to take his face off.
Authority is not given to you to deny the return of the king.
Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
This is pitiful. 1,000 people freezing their butts off waiting to worship a rat. What a hype. Sounds like they used to mean something in this town. They used to pull the hog out and they used to eat it.
Welcome to the lair, Kingston.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
Just like you on this island, Dr. Moore.
Now hear this, Goldfinger.
Code name? Thunderball.
Why do they call you Dirty Harry?
The Bible calls this day Armageddon.
You are now listening to your cinema.
Alright, welcome to episode 97 of Cinema Crespo Beast. I'm your host, Christopher Crespo. It is, we're just a little over a week away from Thanksgiving, so I hope you're already putting on your stretchy pants and you're lining up outside Best Buy, getting ready to spend $200 on a shitty television, because that's what this time of year is all about.
Oh, screw that, man. I'm working out, getting ready to eat a bunch of turkey. I'm going to eat more turkey this year than I ever did.
You're working out to eat turkey?
Yeah, well, it increases my appetite. I've been eating like a madman, like
so that's
four
why
meals a day.
That's
so,
why
so
you've been working
I'm going to eat a shit ton of turkey
that's
this year.
That's the only reason you've been working out.
Yes.
To build up your
turkey
metabolism
yes.
to
so
get
so I can
higher.
Eat more turkey.
Because you already have the metabolism of a hummingbird.
Yes.
You want the metabolism of a hummingbird.
Of an emaciated hummingbird.
On crystal meth.
Yes. That way I can eat an entire turkey and not get a pound.
I mean, that's probably going to happen anyway, but now it's like you're going to eat an entire turkey and then lose weight.
Probably.
Sweat it off.
Yes.
That's Drew Sicogburn. Drew, how's it going?
It's going, man. Another week here on Cinema Crespo Diesel.
Another week has come and gone. Episode 97. Only been doing this for 97 weeks. 97 weeks
so, it's
of
so
our
weird.
Lives.
It's almost 2 years, Chris.
We are coming up on the 2-year anniversary.
104.
Episode 104. Before we get there, episode 100. Month before that.
I think, are we going to blow our load early for episode 100?
I'm going to try to do something big for episode 100. I'm thinking, because we had Tom the Beer Guy on for 1 year anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking of bringing him back for the 2 year.
Of course.
If he's around, if he's available, he's a busy guy.
I know.
He's always
doing a lot of work.
Doing a lot of work. He's got that awesome brewing, the actual brewing going on locally mm-hmm. here. He's a judge constantly at beer festivals and stuff. But maybe we can get him back in here.
He's been doing a lot of vacationing
as well. He's been doing a lot of vacationing. We can get him back. Tell us more stories about carrying bags of gasoline past Mel Gibson.
Yes.
That'd be
awesome.
That'd be pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be pretty great. But it's just, speaking of guests, no guests, just you and me this week.
Sweet.
Which is fine by me, because we got a lot to talk about.
I'm okay with that.
And I enjoy having a guest on, you know, I like the dynamic of having the third person there. It's always fun, I think, for us and the listeners. But then again, Drew, I also like having episodes where it's just you and me, because I feel like we can get deeper into the movies that we see.
Well, it all depends. I mean, if the guest has seen the movie, they can throw in a different insight.
Yeah, but that's rare.
Yeah, that is rude.
It's not really like is. I don't. I never
It really is. Rare.
I never tell my guests to go see the movie. Like if they want to see, it, that's great. But I never tell them to. I don't even tell them what movies we're seeing. I just assume they know we're seeing the most recent.
Maybe we should start inviting the guests along with us.
Oh, interesting. That's an interesting one. We can invite the guests to see the movie, come back here and record. See, now we're asking them to set aside like 5 hours.
I was thinking more along the lines of like if they're available, I'll be during the weekend. You know, go see the movie
with
them.
Us. Right.
You know, we can hang out, drink some beer afterwards, whatever.
Talk about it, pre-ramble.
Uh-huh. And then when they come on the show, they'll have a better idea of what the hell's going on.
Might have to do that. Big Mike did tell me last time I saw him, one of the last times I saw him, he was like, hey, next time I'm on your show, let me know ahead of time what movie you're seeing so I can make sure to see it.
You know, or maybe he can go see it by himself.
Yeah, exactly.
That'll work too.
So, we'll
more input.
Maybe we'll make more of an effort to do that. But we don't have that situation. It's just you and me, which again, like I said, I still like that dynamic. I think it works out pretty good. Either way, it works well for us, what we do. So, speaking of what we do, we have movie news. We have a couple of questions from the Facebook and the Twitter. Got a new Billy D's Death of the Movie. So, I said it, so that means I got to... We got a box office recap, new movies on DVD, in theaters. People, we have a lot to talk about. So, of course, two movies that we both saw, and then a third one that I saw to review...
Correct.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That's going to be a lot of content we're squeezing here.
Sir.
Hope you people enjoy. Here we go. Like we start with every week, though, we have to do the Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. So here is the little theme song. For the entertainment that you see, time for the Netflix Pick of the Week. The Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. Alrighty. So Drew's got the Crespedisa Randomizer 9000 right there. So, see what kind of movie it spits out. You can check the past Netflix picks of the week at chriscrespo.com. At chriscrespo.com, you just click on the side there. It says Netflix picks. You got two options. You have all the picks. I did like a year's worth of picks before I even had my own website. So you can check out the link to the Blogspot there. Blogspot website that I put up real quick. That's when I was on SBK Live at nights. And since we've been doing Cinema Crespediso, Netflix picks at chriscrespo.com. You can also check out the link there. And it's so many movies. Netflix puts so many on. Sometimes they take them down. They put them back up. So, disclaimer.
All right,
old picks may not be on there right now. They may come back down the road, but they may not be on there now. So,
well, as of right now, this week's Netflix Instant Pick of the Week is... Killing Them Softly.
Excellent. Excellent, excellent.
Talking in cars.
Talking, men talking in cars.
And Scoot gets his brains blown out.
And Scoot, spoiler alert, gets his brains blown out. That's Drewster Cogburn with the Netflix instant spoiler alert, but that's fine. When we had that spoiler episode we're talking about, when movies are no longer in theaters, it's kind of open season anyway. So.
Then this movie hasn't been in theaters for a very,
it's been a while. It's been
time.
When did this come out? 2012?
Something like that.
Something like that. I don't think it was last year. I'm pretty sure it was the year before. Killing Them Softly, directed by Andrew Dominik, guy who exploded onto the indie film scene with Chopper.
Such a great movie.
Crazy movie.
I can't believe I saw that in theaters.
For a little while, that was on the Netflix Instant, I think. It was a past Netflix pick of the week. It hasn't been on there in a while, though.
Shout out to Ron B. Long Beach Englewood.
Ron B. Long Beach Englewood.
For bringing me to that movie. Hey, Drew, we're going to see this weird movie, and you should come with us, okay? Sure.
What was that?
And at the time, too, it wasn't even like, oh, yeah, and it's with Eric Bana. You know
yeah,
Eric
no,
Bana.
I have
no,
no
one
I,
knew.
No,
one
I have no idea who Eric Bana is. I was at this tiny little theater, this little art house theater in Sarasota. Mm. I was in high school. It's just, let's go watch this movie. It was me, Maddie J, and Ron B. Long Beach Englewood.
Shout out to Maddie J.
Those were the only three people in the entire theater.
Yeah.
And we watched this movie.
Such a good movie.
And I came out like, what?
What the fuck? Yeah. Especially if you don't know what you're getting into.
People make movies like this? Like, what the hell is going on here?
In Australia, they did. At that time, Chopper's so good.
Fantastic.
Chopper is like the Australian Bronson.
It is.
It is. Real life. Anyway, we're not talking about Chopper, though.
Nope.
Same director, Andrew Dominik,
softly.
Who then, several years down the road, a good amount of time passed before he was able to make his next movie, which was The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford, which is one of these movies.
Lots of people staring off into the vast nothingness in a field. A
lot of Brad Pitt standing in wheat fields looking at the sunset. Very Terrence Malick inspired Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. adapted from the novel Assassination of Jesse James by Coward Robert Ford, which is why the that movie has like a very novel book quality to it, especially with the voiceover. And I love how that movie, like, the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford happens with like half an hour left in the movie, and then the last half hour is all coward Robert Ford. That's so good. That might even be my favorite part of the movie, when Jesse James exits stage left as a corpse.
Yes.
Or is it, you exit traditionally stage right? I don't know.
You know, this painting just doesn't seem right.
It's like, that painting's a little dusty. I'm gonna go clean it.
What?
And then, fantastic movie, but then another one where it's like Chopper, it's not mainstream, it's not normal.
No.
That movie made no money. You thought they would have put more into the marketing and just try to sell it as a Brad Pitt Western. But the marketing was kind of honest as to what it was. Yeah. They also didn't put any money, that much money into it, and then it made like $5 million, yep. Which is a crime, because it's so good. A few years go by, Andrew Dominik puts out Killing Them Softly. Again.
Mr. Pitt.
With Bradley Pitts.
Yep.
This time as a guy named Coogan. This is based on a book called Coogan's Trade, which Killing Them Softly is a good title.
Mm-hmm.
But because he's like, I like to kill them softly.
Yeah.
From a distance.
He said it.
He said it. Let's get out of here. But I think I like Coogan's Trade actually a little better, because he's Coogan and his trade is that he's
killing people.
He's a killer of not just people, but of he's like the mafia's internal affairs.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, we have an internal problem that he needs to take care of.
No, we can't go to the police.
Nope, can't go to the police because we're organized crime.
This guy's our police.
Yeah.
People know who he is, or they definitely know who he works for, because he was mentioning Dylan.
Yeah.
He drops Dylan's name over and over again. We see Dylan once in a flashback.
Yep, and that's it.
And that's it. Played by Sam Shepard. And he barely even does anything. He follows another guy, and another guy does all the heavy work. And
yeah.
Then he looks at his watch. He's like, let's go get a beer. He's such a badass that whenever people see him or he mentions Dylan, they all collectively shit their pants.
Yep.
Because like, shit, this guy's here. That means
something bad is happening.
Bad news. Ray Liotta is a guy who runs a card game. Card game gets knocked over by a couple of dimwits played by the great Scoot McNairy.
Yes.
Oh, man, I just saw another trailer with him in it. And it's like, Scoot! That's my boy, Scoot! And also the trailer that I saw. Damn, now he can't. Now I wish I could remember the trailer that I saw. It was in front of Rosewater. It had Scoot and Ben Mendelsohn, the other guy who's in Killing Them Softly, who knocks over. And I was like, yes, it's these two guys. They're both great. And they knock over the card game. So because of that, all card games in the area are put on hold. So people are losing money. They call in Coogan because Dylan is sick. And it's all investigating, like Drew said. And half the movie is men talking cars.
Yep. Men talking to cars.
Which is why this movie didn't make much money either. Because it was let's market it as a cool mafia movie.
And it was just people talking cars.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, well, actually, it's way more philosophical and a lot of overtones, because it takes place during, right, leading up to the 2008 elections.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of politics, actually.
A lot of
politics in the background, a lot of talk about the economy.
Yeah, and how it's affecting, I mean, they're using how this, you know, knocking out of the card games is like a...
like the banks?
Yeah, it's like the same thing that's happening with the entire American economy. It's just this one little mafia thing.
Yeah, there's a parallel there. It's a crazy movie, man. It's really cool. I really like it. Very stylish. Andrew Dominik, actually saw him... I didn't see him. Yeah, I saw him at a coffee shop. We hung out for a while. I read an interview with him where he said that now, a couple years later, he looks like Killing Them Softly, and he kind of cringes at the stylized choices of the movie. He feels like he made it too stylized. But then he also said, maybe I'll feel different about it in 10 years from now. I say, Andrew Dominik, the stylization was perfect. I enjoy it quite a bit. So, there you go. Killing Them Softly. Netflix is the pick of the week. Good job, Drew.
Thanks, sir.
So that brings us to the box office recap for the weekend. Drew, what are we doing here with these numbers?
Where we're going to start off with the number 17 movie.
Oh, okay. This week. Not exactly top five.
It made $801,000. For a total of...
And how many theaters?
It's only in 419. It got upped 331 this week.
God damn.
But it's only made like $2.5 million on a budget of 3.3.
Okay. So it's getting there.
And the name of the movie is Whiplash.
Whiplash. Whoosh, whoosh. Whiplash.
Oh, my neck. My back.
My neck and my back. We saw Whiplash starring Miles Teller and J.K. Simmons. Drew, why don't you go ahead? We just saw this movie.
Literally.
Got out of the theater about, what time is it? We got about an hour and 20 minutes ago. So, maybe a little bit even more sooner than that. So now, while it's fresh in our minds, Drew, get us started. What did you think of Whiplash?
I thought it was great. It's a tiny little character piece. This kid, Miles Teller, is a he's in a music school, you know, kind of maybe like Juilliard
A conservatory.
Yes.
I wonder if that place is real. Schaefer?
I don't know. Schaefer Institute for Music, something
like
that.
Try to look
But he's a drummer, and he wants to be the best.
He's a freshman drummer, first year.
He wants to be the best, and you know, there's this teacher who's like the best of the best, and he's the one who runs the quote unquote studio band, which is like you know, the end all be all of
the premier band, the one that they set up for competitions and shit.
And he wants to impress the guy who runs that, and he does, and he gets in the studio band, and then things ensue. The teacher is maybe pushing too hard. Maybe Miles Teller isn't good enough. There's a lot of craziness going on, and it's about one man's obsession with the drums,
and the other man's obsession with pushing
with making him a drummer
with perfection, with pushing and achieving musical nirvana
of sorts.
Via tactics that seem more in line with Arlie Ermey's character in Full Metal Jacket.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Intense. J.K. Simmons was old man ripped.
Yeah, he kind of was.
He was a little old man ripped.
I think it's because he was wearing the old man ripped shirts. You know, the ones with the baby sleeves.
The way they cling.
Yeah.
Because you see his arms, he's ripped. He never takes his shirt off.
No. Well, it's because he's got the old man flab.
Might have been old saggy underneath it.
He's got the flabby titties in the belly.
It's just in the beginning, when we first see his character, we see him inflicting abuse on some of his students. One of them, he's railing on for being fat. The guy wasn't even that fat. I mean, he was a little chubby, but I mean, I know what fat is. The guy isn't that fat, right? But he was like, "You mind so much in your Happy Meal? Like, what are you looking down there for? There's no Mars bar." Then he kicks my ass. Get out of here, fat ass.
Well, yeah,
and then I'm like, "Oh, look at this guy. He's the type of dude. He probably even looks at other people that are out of shape, and he just it disgusts him. He's like, get your life together. Yeah. Push yourself to achieve perfection with your body as well with whatever you do with your life, blah, blah, blah." It seemed like a character choice.
But directly after that, it's him and Miles Teller, and he's like, "Oh, hey, how's it going, dude? Just, you know, do your thing, blah, blah, blah." Yeah. He learned a couple things about Miles Teller's family, and then used it against him immediately.
I was like,
immediately
wow.
Used that information against him.
When that happened, I was like, this guy is kind of evil.
Yeah, really evil.
That was dick. That was really dick. He is a dick, that character, the J.K. Simmons character. What?
Mr. Fletcher?
Is he right, Mr. Fletcher? It's a great character.
Such
menace.
It all depends on, you know, I guess the outcome. You know, if you push too hard and you push till someone breaks, then no, it's not a good thing. But if you push them just hard enough to where maybe they bend a little and then come out stronger. Then obviously
tempering steel. In the fire.
That's
how he sees himself, as the fire.
It all depends on how strong that person is.
Yeah,
it runs the gamut. You see it in the movie.
You do see it in the movie. You do see and hear about all sorts of effects of this guy's, I guess you can call it teaching style. Yeah. Is it much of a teacher? It's more of a coach type of thing.
Yeah, definitely more of a coach, not a teacher.
Yeah,
because at that level, you're expected to already know your craft.
Yeah, he's like, you should be able to read this music. What does this say? What does that say? Yeah. Like, reading music is fucking a bitch, man. This is an intense movie.
It helps if you like jazz.
Oh, yeah. Plenty of jazz. Jazz, if you like drumming, if you like music. I thought the music was great.
The music was fantastic.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the music. But obviously, it's focusing on drums a lot. So that's a lot of the movie's drumming, right? And you see it. You see the literal leaving of blood and sweat on the drum kit.
Yes, literally. Yeah, yeah.
The only thing that's missing is there are people cry, but you never actually see the tears hit the drum set.
I'm assuming that they do.
I'm assuming there's some mixture of tears in there, but there's literally blood and sweat.
Yeah,
spilled for the drumming in this movie, and it's intense. It is brutal. But it's good.
It's really good.
Really good. One of the better movies I've seen this year.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty sucked in.
But it always seems that way, these lower budget movies that I hear nothing about.
Yeah.
Go see, like, on a whim. I mean, The Guest.
The Guest. It's the same thing. The Guest and Whiplash are both
Whiplash.
Movies I saw the names popping up, like, on Twitter and stuff, where people are like, The Guest is great, go see it. Whiplash is great, go see it. But then no one was giving out any more information, which I appreciate. People were just saying, go see it. Over and over and over and over, so it sticks. And then when you get the opportunity, we go see it.
And it's awesome.
And it kicks your ass because it's like, pow, it's fucking intense. Yeah. It is. That's the adjective that comes to mind the most for me. Because for some reason, it's a movie about a drummer, and a dude who's a teacher coach and just trying to get by, joining this band, just trying to be better. That's all the movie's about.
Yeah.
When you say it like that, it doesn't sound too like in your face.
Oh, but it is.
But the way it's done, the pressure that these characters are under, what the Miles Teller character is under, the way he's living his life, the choices he makes, it's just like every time if something happens, like, oh my God, like what can happen next to this guy, you know? It's fucking good.
It was.
It's good. So Whiplash, people.
Go see it.
Go see it. Check it out when you get the chance because it is worth it. Help it get to that $3 million budget mark because, man, that's money well spent. Also, shot in New York. Looks great.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. They made sure it's making like this is a New York City movie. We're getting pizza and stuff. Going to jazz clubs. All right, so there you go. So, yeah, actually, so, and we would say, go. I'm just assuming, speaking for you, we both say go see it in a theater, right?
Well, I mean, it's...
If you get the chance,
if you get the chance, I would say see it in a theater because, you know, maybe they get more money that way.
Yeah,
but if
I'd
not,
I say to support them.
But if not, at least see it on DVD when
make,
it comes out.
Make sure to see it for sure. If it's not playing in a theater near you, which is possible because how many theaters did you say it was playing in? 400?
400.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a good chance it's not playing near you right now. Understandable. It may not expand to your area. It's a smaller movie.
It'll be on Redbox next week, though.
It'll be there soon, people. So, Whiplash. Keep an eye out for that one. On the Rotten Tomatoes, let's see what they're saying here. Out of 167 reviews, 162 of them are positive.
Oh, wow.
So that's a 97% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Let's cut that down to top critics. What did the top critics say? Out of 47 reviews, 45 of them are positive. Wow. 96%. So everyone loves it. Average rating of 8.7 out of 10.
Definitely.
That's where I put it, right around 8.5. Yeah. Let's see what their little summary is. Intense. The first word. That's the
intense.
Word I use. Intense, inspiring, and well-acted. Absolutely. Whiplash is a brilliant sophomore effort from director Damien Chazelle and a riveting vehicle for stars J.K. Simmons and Miles Teller. Now I want to know, it's a sophomore movie.
What was his first?
What did Damien Chazelle, what did he do before? That's an interesting name. Damien Chazelle. You know what that reminded me a little bit of? Drumline. With the drumming stuff. And the attention to the photography.
Well, yeah.
And like, you know, I mean, the actual drumming stuff in Drumline is amazing.
Yeah, it's really good.
It holds up all the crappy shit between the drumming. How do you spell his last name? It's like a gazelle, but with a chuck.
A Chazelle?
It's a Chazelle. Who's Damien Chapa? I don't want that guy. Let's see here. Damien Chazelle. Look at this guy. It's baby-faced. 29 years old from Providence, Rhode Island. No, that can't be right. You really did that? Let's see. Whiplash. Guy. Nope. What? La La Land? What? How's this a software for? I only see one movie. Oh, and it's called Guy and Madeline. What? Where'd he go? Guy and Madeline on a Park Bench.
Okay.
From 2009. It's a drama musical with no one you'd know. And not even particularly well reviewed. So. This one's great. Whiplash. Check it out.
Coming to number 13 this week.
13?
A movie that I did not see, but Mr. Crespo did.
Ah, yes.
Rosewater. I had a weekend gross of 1.2, same as the total budget of Unlisted.
I would put it somewhere around. I would say maybe it's like a $10-15 million movie.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's a little less or even a little more. Like, give or take $5 or $10 million there. Rosewater is written and directed by Jon Stewart, his first film as a director. It's the one that he took the break from Daily Show to do. And it's about, based on a guy's memoir called And Then They Came For Me. And it's this Canadian-Iranian reporter who's living in London, and he went to Iran in 2009 to cover the elections, the Ahmadinejad Mousavi elections, and he got there ahead of time, and you know, the word on the street, Mousavi was getting a lot of support, and people were really, really pushing for him, and then the results came in, and Ahmadinejad won by a landslide, mm-hmm. So the people hit the streets, like, this is bullshit, we know who he voted for, we didn't vote for this fuck, right? He's there as a reporter, breaks out his camera, videotapes some people, does his job. The next day, some Iranian government type officials come, pick him up, take him in for questioning. Questioning lasts like, I don't know, 6 months?
Sounds about right.
Something like that. Yeah. Detained in solitary confinement, trying to get him to confess to being a spy. Planting a spy hired by the government or whoever to work as a reporter to plant fake news stories and all this shit. And a majority of the movie is about that, his imprisonment, the interrogations, the crazy guy who's, you know, tasked with the job of trying to get the confession out of this dude. And it's that dude and Gael Garcia Bernal. Do I have his name here? Gael Garcia Bernal. He's the dude who plays the Iranian guy, the reporter. Mm-hmm. And these two guys, they're so good. Both of them are really, really good in these interrogation scenes, especially the lead, Gael Garcia, in the scenes where he's by himself, you know, in his cell and stuff. He's really, really good. It's a very interesting, intriguing story. It gets, you know, it gets into, it shows how things get a little murky in there, in those interrogations, and how someone can be, you know, tripped up and twisted around, and how they may start considering maybe confessing to being a spy. I'm not a spy, but maybe I should confess to this, or maybe they're right. Maybe I am a spy. I don't even know it. You know, maybe it was done without my knowledge, you know? It's good. It's a very good movie. Jon Stewart, good director. Definitely good director. There are times when it's more straightforward stylistically, and then there are times when he puts a little flair here or there, where he seems like he knows what he wants to do thematically. It works. It's a good movie. I wouldn't say rush out to go see it, but it's definitely worth checking out. You know what's interesting? This is one part. Probably part of the reason why Stewart wanted to get involved with this project to begin with. There's a scene early on where, while the reporter, he's in Iran interviewing other people, he meets up with some people for himself to be interviewed, people he's meeting up with. Daily Show. He did a Daily Show interview.
Nice.
And they recreated it with Jason Jones. And this was really interesting because they kind of show the behind-the-scenes stuff. Because they're sitting there, they're doing an interview, and it's like, Jason Jones asks this ridiculous question, like, are you a terrorist? And he's like, no. Like, is that something that terrorists would say? And he's like, just staring at him. And then he starts laughing. And then they both start laughing. He's like, all right, so don't worry about it. It's cool. Remember, you're a straight guy. I'm the asshole. Okay, what's the next question? What are we doing? Yeah. The way they set everything up.
Mm-hmm.
It was very interesting how they did that. And then, while he's being interrogated, the interrogator dude, he pulls out like a computer, a laptop, he opens it up, plays the video, and then he plays a clip from the Daily Show interview, and he's like, why are you talking to this American spy? He said he's a spy. And he's like, no, that's a...
It's a joke.
It's a show, it's a comedy. And he's like, why were you talking to this American saying these things? Did you say this stuff? And he's like, well, yeah, I did. It's on TV in America. And then he's like, why would you do that? You know? It's like, oh shit, you got in trouble because of the Daily Show.
Nuts.
So that's why Jon Stewart's like, fuck,
maybe we should make a movie about this guy.
I gotta tell this guy's story. It's good. It's a good movie. I definitely would recommend checking it out. Great acting all around. So there you go, Rosewater. Let's see what they said here on the Rotten Tomat. 74% out of 97 reviews. 47% positive. 6.6 out of 10. I'd go, yeah, that's about right. Maybe 7 out of 10. Timely, solidly acted, and unabashedly earnest, Rosewater serves as an impressive calling card for first-time director Jon Stewart. Sounds about right. Okay, so there you go. Can we finally get to the top five?
Coming in at number five this week, Gone Girl made an additional $4.6 million, total of $152.7 on a budget of $61.
Officially David Fincher's highest grossing film.
Good for him. Maybe he'll get more work.
He's not really struggling for work.
I know.
Yeah, but...
Maybe they'll give him bigger budgets.
Whatever he... I'll let him do whatever he wants to do next, hopefully. You know, good for Fincher. It's a great movie. Check out our spoiler episode we did a little while ago.
Coming at number four this week, Beyond the Lights. Had a weekend gross of $6.5 million. Sims total budget unlisted.
New movie came out. What did we see the trailer for in front of? We saw the trailer.
Bunch of nonsense.
We saw it in front of something.
A couple times.
And that's one that's about...
pop star falls in love, doesn't want to be a pop star anymore.
Pop star falls in love, doesn't want to be a pop star. It's got to choose between being a pop star and being in love. Let's see what they said about it on the Rotten Tomatoes. It has, out of 57 reviews, 84% of them are positive.
Really?
Average rating of 6.9 out of 10.
Wow.
Thanks to smart direction and a powerhouse performance from Gugu Mbatha-Raw, I guess that's the lead chick.
Yeah.
Beyond the Lights transcends its formulaic storyline to deliver thoroughly entertaining drama. Sounds like something worth checking out on DVD.
Perhaps.
So there you go. Beyond the Lights, people. Pretty well reviewed.
And coming in number three this week, Interstellar. Made a weekend gross of $29.1 million, total of $97.8 on a budget of $165.
What was the total again?
97.8.
All right. I can see it getting to like 150, topping out around there by Christmas time. by the time they're ready to yank it from theaters, which will be good for a movie like this, a long sci-fi movie like that, released at the end of the year, not during the summer. I think it's pretty good. Obviously, we saw this one last week.
Yeah, we had a spoiler episode about it.
So you can check out both reviews. If you download episode 96, when we had Nick Sharaba on, we did a non-spoiler review of Interstellar. And then right before that, we put out a spoiler conversation where Drew and I, we talked about that movie for like over 40 minutes.
Yeah, something like that.
It was a long damn time because there was a lot to unpack, a lot going on in that movie. We could have done, if we did two more of those, it would have been the whole length of
the movie.
So check those out. You can also go to chriscrespo.com to check out my full review of Interstellar over there.
Coming at number two this week, Big Hero 6 had a weekend gross of $36 million, total of $111.7 on a budget of $165.
Still got to see this. I mean, 88% on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. It's well-reviewed. It's liked. Maybe this weekend. I think this weekend comes up to be kind of a slower weekend for movies, so maybe you'll get a chance to see it, and then we can talk about it, because that'd be cool.
Yeah.
But we did see the number one movie.
We did.
Unfortunately.
Number two. We can gross $38 million. Same as total. Budget unlisted.
Oh, boy. Let's talk about Dumb and Dumber 2 for a second here.
It was fucking awful.
It was not good.
It was really, really bad. I actually wish I hadn't seen it. Because I'll never get that time back.
It was not good.
I think I chuckled twice. And both of them were just updated jokes from the last movie.
They did do those jokes where it was like the same joke but a little different.
Yep.
There's a part in this movie about three quarters of the way into the movie where I don't even know how it happened. It just happened all of a sudden. There, they said something real quick. They mentioned someone. They turn a corner and then there's the Muttmobile, Mutt Cuts from the first movie. And they're like, oh, there it is. They get in the car. They drive it. It launches up into the air.
Hits the ground, breaks
immediately, and then they have to get into a Zamboni, a pink and blue Zamboni, and take that cross-country or whatever to finish their trip.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's a perfect analogy for the whole movie.
Yes.
They saw the movie's the same thing. It's the original idea. They started
somewhere.
Huge jump. Like, super excited about it. Yeah! And then as soon as they landed, it broke. And they had to keep going with a much lamer version.
That's pretty much the movie.
It encapsulates the whole movie right
there. Yeah, it does.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
They knew what they were doing. They were confessing to us the whole time.
Yeah.
That we know this is garbage. We're going to destroy the mutt truck immediately. And then you'll know we have no hope.
Yeah.
We never had any hope.
Yeah, it was...
We're just trying to make some money. And how much money did it make?
$38 million.
Goddamn! That's making some money. That is making some cash right there.
Well, they only had one weekend to do it, because the second people start talking about this movie, it's not going to make any more.
Word of mouth should hurt it, because people are going to should be skeptical about a sequel, comedy sequel coming out 20 years after the fact. But shit, man, I don't know. Maybe we should have seen it coming the first time.
It's a comedy sequel. I kind of knew, but you know, I figured maybe 20 years was long enough.
Maybe.
And
that's what they thought with Blues Brothers 2000.
Maybe Jim Carrey could still kind of carry this movie, because it's hard. I can't. After watching The Newsroom for two seasons, it's hard to laugh at Jeff Daniels. I just want him spitting out Alan Sorkin stuff.
Yeah.
And then I can be like, yes.
As opposed to Farrelly Brothers
stuff. Yes. Oh, God.
A lot of pee-pee and poo-poo and snot in this movie.
Yep. And there's some
boogers.
And some vagina dust.
Old vagina dust. So that's the kind of humor you like to traffic in, people. Dumb and Dumber 2 is for you. But then again, I don't think it's for anyone.
No.
It's just not good.
It was awful.
Pretty disappointing.
It was horrible.
If you see it on HBO or anything.
Nope.
Unfortunately.
Don't waste your time. You will have more of an appreciation for both of them as actors and for Dumb and Dumber, the original, if you don't see Dumb and Dumber 2.
I think so.
Because now that I've seen Dumb and Dumber 2, like, I'm thinking back on Dumb and Dumber 1, and I'm like, why did I laugh at this movie?
Is this movie really funny? Yeah, I feel like I should watch it now and be like, this wasn't funny. Did we just trick ourselves as a mass culture?
I think maybe we did.
We had a mass delusion.
Yes.
That this movie was humorous.
Good. Yeah.
Can that be possible?
I think it could be.
Because this one sucked.
It was really bad.
Halfway through the movie, I was thinking, is this movie as good or bad as The Three Stooges, which is the Farrelly Brothers' last movie, and which is a hunk of shit. And I determined that it's pretty much the same.
Yeah, it's like, just as awful.
It's like these guys just can't...
They can't do it anymore. They lost that mojo.
And it's not like... I mean, Three Stooges, this, that Hall Pass movie with Jason Statham and Owen Wilson. You ever see that?
It was so bad.
So shitty. They did another one before that. It was like, guys, why? We need to stop.
They had a hot run there for a while.
They had a hot run. Dumb and Dumber. There's Something About Mary. Kingpin. Me, Myself, and Irene. All good stuff, guys. Then he decided to make fun of fat people with Chow Hao, and it was all downhill from there.
Yeah.
Then he went on to Siamese Twins.
Yep, that wasn't funny.
And then, then it was just...
Yeah, it's bad.
Shit after shit after shit. Just taking a shit in audience mouths and expecting them to pay for it.
And they did.
Thanks a lot, Fairly Brothers. We appreciate the mouthful of shit. Let's see what they say on the Rotten Tomatoes. 27%. Out of 90 reviews, not a surprise. 4.4 out of 10 average rating.
I'd score it even lower.
I'd go lower. I'd go like a 2.5, maybe a 3. Mm-hmm. Dumb and Dumber 2 does have its moments, but not enough of them. And the Farrelly Brothers brand of humor is nowhere near as refreshingly transgressive as it once seemed.
Hey, it's what we just said.
Yes, thanks a lot, Rotten Tomatoes, for just copying us. All right, let's see what's coming out in DVD. We have... Where are my notes? Speaking of comedy sequels that don't work, 22 Jump Street works. And it's coming out on DVD on Tuesday. People, check it out. It's good. Sin City 2 also comes out this weekend. Sin City, A Dame to Kill For. That was lame. Seven or 8 years too late on that one.
The Ava Green stuff, she looks really good naked.
Of course she looks good naked.
Other than that,
she looks fantastic naked.
Garbage.
I mean, all the chicks in that movie look great. Rosario Dawson's in it.
Yeah, she looks good too.
But, oh, that movie stinks.
Yeah.
Into the Storm, which looks like shit. And no one
with
the Walking Dead lady who died in that. Maybe she dies in this. The Zombie Tornado. If I Stay, that movie where Chloe Grace Moritz.
Oh, yeah.
She's like in a coma.
Yeah.
And she has to decide whether to come back or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And So It Goes, that Michael Douglas movie that came out that looked like it was from the 90s. I think it's a Rob Reiner movie, actually.
So it did come out in the 90s.
It looked like it should have come out in the 90s. It looked like it was written in the 90s for sure. And Automata, that Antonio Banderas sci-fi movie where he's an insurance adjuster in the future and like he investigates robot malfunctions and then robots are like adjusting or fixing themselves. They're evolving. Do you ever see that trailer?
No, but it sounds interesting.
It sounds interesting, and the trailer was a boss, but it never came out in theaters around here, and then when I looked it up on Rotten Tomatoes, it is poorly reviewed. So now I gotta see it just to see what the fuck went wrong. It looks like Spanish-influenced District 9.
Interesting.
/ Chappie.
Your name is Chappie.
Chappie. All right, what's coming out in theaters, Drew?
There's some documentary called Happy Valley about Jerry Sandusky and the Penn State shit.
I thought you were saying that Jennifer Lawrence movie was a documentary.
No. And the only other movie besides that that's coming out is that Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1.
The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1 of 2 of Book 3.
We're going to take we're gonna pull a Harry Potter here and take the last book and turn it into two movies.
So annoying.
It's really fucking stupid.
So annoying. Well, at least we get a little more Philip Seymour Hoffman. This is one where he didn't get to finish shooting.
Nope. Correct.
But I wonder if that affects the second movie more than this one.
Probably.
We shall see, I guess. That's pretty much the only big movie coming out this weekend. So, like I said, maybe we'll...
go see Big Hero 6.
Yeah, maybe we'll check out Big Hero 6, depending on what expands. I'll tell you what's not expanding here.
Foxcatcher?
Foxcatcher.
Damn it.
Not coming here until Christmas.
Really?
Yes. A whole month away. Because not enough movies are coming out on Christmas Day.
Oh, okay.
You know, Into the Woods,
Foxcatcher, Unbroken,
The Interview, and now Foxcatcher. It's at least four movies coming out on Christmas Day. And then I think there's even one more coming out on Christmas Day. So
you go see Foxcatcher on Christmas Day?
So fuck you guys. Fuck you.
Fuck.
Yeah, it's a band, yes. So there you go. All right, let's take a break here. I got a couple songs. We were talking about Birdman last week and how awesome Birdman
is. It was.
Love Birdman.
Fantastic.
Birdman has a great score. Speaking of jazz drumming. By this dude, what's his name? Antonio Sanchez, I think his name is. The whole score is just awesome jazz drumming. So I pulled one of those tracks. This one's called Strut, Part 2. So we listen to a little bit of jazz drumming for about a minute and a half. And then we'll follow that up with everyone that listens to the show, you've been listening for a while, you know that I'm a big fan of cheesy 80s action movies that have the musical montage at one point. You know, the songs that they throw in there in the middle. Whole fucking songs. This one's from Cobra. It's called Sweet. Angel of the City. So imagine, as you listen to this song, Stallone with mirrored glasses and a toothpick hanging out of his mouth, and driving a car with a gun with a the laser sight on it, and he, as he drives around at night, is
the angel of the city.
The angel of the city out there to protect us. So enjoy these songs, guys. We'll be right back with the second half of episode 97.
Hearing no good. Welcome to the Crespo Show.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it, bro. See you on Tuesday, man. Thanks very much to Kevin for introducing the Crespo Dome, as he does every week, live here in studio. I'm sitting across the way from Drew Sagogren. Drew, how's it going?
It's going.
What's that? What were you just eating?
A donut.
Because you got some on your face, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
I was not going to sit here looking at you for the next half an hour to 40 minutes.
With donut on my face?
With donut on your face. I contemplated it.
You should have.
It's just a little too gross for me. I can't. I don't do icky humor. Again, Fairly Brothers. With the vomiting and the shitting and the... No vomiting. Was there any vomiting in Dumb and Dumber 2?
I don't think so. Maybe. Perhaps.
Okay, well, anyway, here we go. Plugs. Drew, where can people find you online?
Antero419, all over social media.
All over social media. That's on the Twitter. That's on the Snapchat. That's on the Elo. Are you on that Tinder? How about that Tumblr?
Are you
on the Tumblr?
Nope. I'm on the Tumblr.
You're on the Tumblr?
Yeah. Have been for a while.
Check out Drew's Tumblr, yo.
I don't post anything on it.
Where's your live journal at?
That's old. Don't know.
Are you on Friendster?
What?
Friendster?
Excuse me?
Are you on Friendster?
I don't even know what it is.
Is your MySpace page so active?
Nope.
Are you on Napster?
Never was.
How about Scour?
Nope. Don't even know what that is.
Do you have any Netscape?
Isn't that an old internet browser?
Are you on any message boards?
No.
Alt? Already from AltNet?
Nope.
Are you in the deep internet?
Deep internet scares me.
Silk Road? Silk Road 2?
Silk Road 3 now.
Silk Road 3?
So Silk Road 2 got shut down like the day after it got started, and then Silk Road 3 came up like an hour after Silk Road 2 got shut down.
What?
Yeah.
So you know more about that shit than I do.
I saw some article on the internet about it. I was like, what?
On the internet? I don't believe it then. Check me out on Twitter at I am Chris Crespo. Hit up the show at Crespo Diso on Twitter. Or like us on Facebook at Cinema Crespo Diso. Though I'll tell you what, we do more on the Twitter. The show is more active on Twitter than Facebook because I run that shit and I like Twitter more than I like Facebook.
Well, there you go.
Man, Facebook sucks, man.
Yeah, it's lame.
It's lame, guys. Get off it. Because you're all on it. Now I feel like I gotta be on it to let you know, hey, we're on
it.
And you should get off it. Get on that Elo. Elo.com. Elo.co. Elo.co/CinemaCrespediso. Also, Antihero 419.
Correct.
Also, I Love Blood. Billy D. New York City show correspondent Billy D. You can follow him on Twitter at I Love Blood.
SBK is on there too.
SBK is on the Elo. I forgot what it is. The handle
yeah,
was
there.
And Angel's on there. And, a bunch of people. Not that many people. I really don't use it.
Hello.
I'm in a place called Erdogo. Remember that song?
Nope.
U2 song?
Uh-uh.
No. So much to talk about here. I actually want to start with... Oh, also, you know what? You can email the show at cinemacrespediso@gmail.com. I feel like not enough people use that option. People, cinemacrespediso@gmail.com. Also, please rate us and review us on iTunes and Stitcher. That helps us out a lot. It helps us out more than you know. And it takes you like 2 minutes. So, come on. It's not like we're asking for money here. If you want to send us money,
that'd be awesome too.
Email us. I'll let you know where you can send it to. Just this past Friday, Drew, I don't know if you heard... But
I probably didn't.
You probably didn't, but they had on CBS, they aired the first time on TV, the Hollywood Film Awards. Wait, hold on a second. Let me try that again. The Hollywood Film Awards.
All right.
That was a big fat joke. I think we've talked about this before in the past, but now it's on TV, so let's bring it up again. The Hollywood Film Awards was started in the 90s. By this dude named Carlos de Abreu.
Okay.
So, as that reason, they are called, the awards are called the Carloses.
Okay.
As opposed to the Oscars.
Yeah.
They're the Carloses. he started the Hollywood Film Awards
and
by himself.
And the Carlos goes to.
He started this as a way to get into the whole awards circuit thing in California and Hollywood because that whole thing with the Golden Globes. All leading up to the Academy Awards, the Oscars in February. That's all big money there. The money spent by the studios in campaigning to get their artists and their movies nominated for shit. It's a lot of money spent on parties, private screenings, advertising, shit like that, sending out screeners to everyone, you know? And the Hollywood Foreign Press, they started the Golden Globes as a way to, like, get their reporters more exclusive access to studios and hence their stars and directors. That was done back in the 60s when the studio system was different, when studios had people under contract, right? Individual people instead of just doing the movies. And the Golden Globes for a long time was a joke because of that, until, you know, it was on TV long enough that enough people fucking treated it as a real thing. Now it's a real thing. They faked it until they made it. You know what I mean?
Kind of like what we're doing.
It's exactly like what we're doing, except we do it out of love and genuine respect for our audience and what we do, whereas the Hollywood Film Awards is all about making that money, getting to meet the people, hobnobbing. It's all a bunch of bullshit. You know why it's bullshit, Drew? I'll give you a prime example of why a Hollywood Film Awards is bullshit. Last year, they awarded Best Screenplay to Quentin Tarantino for Django Unchained.
Okay.
Can't argue against that. It was nominated even at the Oscars. Yeah. I don't think it may have even won, possibly. It might have won. Here's the problem with that. When they gave Tarantino an award for his movie, Tarantino was still editing the movie. It wasn't done.
So how can they possibly...
Thank you, Drew. All of these awards that they're giving out are all for movies that aren't scheduled to come out for like another month. They're movies that most of us haven't seen. And in cases like that, they're movies that aren't even fucking finished. It's publicity. It's so that this guy can throw a party and fucking Quentin Tarantino can show up to his party. You know who picks the awards? You know who does the voting? For the Carloses?
Carlos himself?
Carlos does the voting. For years, it's been Carlos. Now, they say this year, there was a panel of 12 anonymous...
Carloses.
Might as well have been. 12 anonymous voters. Kept anonymous so that they couldn't be lobbied by studios.
And so no one knows it's just Carlos.
But no one knows it's just Carlos. And some people speculate maybe his wife also, Janice, who made her bread and butter back in the day in the 90s. She was a Price is Right model.
Oh, nice.
Didn't article doesn't say whether or not she was one of the ones that was finger blasted by Bob Barker, who then went on to sue, but we can all just assume that yes, it was.
Yes, because that's probably how she got her money.
Probably how she got her money. So they put on this award. CBS cut a deal with them last year. They aired the award ceremony this past Friday. I don't have any numbers as far as ratings. I'm sure they were poor because it was the first time around, and it's CBS, and on a Friday night. More importantly, I don't have the results. I don't have the award winners because I don't give a fuck. And neither should you. That's the whole point of this. These are the Hollywood Sham Awards is what they're at. You know? It's bull.
They're on TV now.
But now they're on TV. That's what they're hoping. That's what they want. You know who came out in support of the Hollywood Film Awards? The Hollywood Reporter. The magazine, The Hollywood Reporter. Hollywood Reporter happens to be owned by the same company that owns CBS.
Hey, that's probably why.
So, you know, there you go. That's the type of thing we're talking about here. They're trying to get a new award show out there that they can sell to advertisers. As long as the celebrity...
CBS just wants their cut.
They just want their cut. As long as the celebrity show up to the party, it's going to keep happening. And they're going to be giving out awards to movies that haven't even come out yet, that aren't even finished. And that's a bunch of bullshit. Hollywood Sham Awards. The Fuck Awards. Fuck them. That's what the F stands for. Hollywood Fuck Awards. Maybe I'll need to show that. No, I can't. That's too explicit. iTunes doesn't like that too much. I did pull out this whole article here, too, about... it was started in 1997, by the way.
Oh,
so
nice.
This guy's been doing this shit for a long fucking time. And it's starting to get to a place where it's making some people money for a bunch of crap. A bunch of bullshit. People, please, Hollywood Film Awards. I've been on record, though, before on this show. Awards for art is fucking...
garbage.
It's disgusting. It's gross. I mean, how do you compare art? Which is something that we do when we talk about movies, too. Like, when we're talking about Dumb and Dumber 2, we were comparing it to Dumb and Dumber. Even though it's the same artist, it's two pieces of art made 20 years apart from each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of them, in my eyes, is good, and the other one, in my eyes, is not.
Right. So, I mean, it's almost inevitable to compare them. We were talking about our overseer, Soul Brother Kevin.
Yes, sir.
Earlier. He just left. He was out of here. Thanks for doing the intro again. He has a thing where he doesn't like comparing things at all.
Apples to oranges.
He doesn't like comparing apples to apples. He doesn't even want to compare two red apples. This red apple is this one. This apple is this one.
Interesting.
It is interesting. How can you I feel like you still need that frame of reference. You still need to bounce things off each other to see what works and what doesn't. But then to give out an award and say, this is the fucking best, even if people are voting for it.
Well, I mean, awards, just like anything, for the most part, are subjective anyway.
Right.
So, you know, just because the Billboard, you know, gives out an award to Taylor Swift saying that she's the
most influential female artists of the 21st century.
Exactly. That doesn't mean I believe it or that I agree.
Or that it's true.
Or that it's even true.
Most importantly, or that
correct.
It's true. Yeah. It's a gross, dirty thing that all comes down to money. Mm-hmm. If people are ever wondering what's the point of any of this
money.
Shit, it's always money in some way, shape, or form. And if you can't figure out where the money's coming in or going out, then don't worry about it.
Oh, don't forget about ego, too.
That's why you're not doing it.
It's an ego feeder.
Oh, yeah.
Awards are ego feeders.
For sure, too. That's why Carlos does what Carlos does, because he can throw it at a party and sort of people come out and they shake his hand, and oh, shit. Juice of Conqueror and Versatile. I push him like that guy with the lash.
Just don't push me like the guy in Foxcatcher, Chris.
That looks so good. Man. I can't wait to see Foxcatcher. We've done this type of game before, so we can get through it pretty quickly. Fill in the blanks game. I'm going to give you a title. You fill in the blank.
Okay.
This is the name edition. So, for example, I say when Harry met blank.
Sally.
Sally. There you go. You even let me finish it. That's how good you are. So, why don't we get a... Let me see. I'm going to look this over real quick. I think you're going to get... Yes. Definitely. Ooh. I think you're going to get... Yeah, that's...
Okay.
Here we go. You ready, Drew?
Yes.
Number one, Monty Python's The Life of?
Brian.
Number two, blank Scissorhands.
Edward.
Correct. Number three, The Life Aquatic with?
Steve Zissou.
Correct. Number four, Talladega Nights : The Legend of?
Oh, what the fuck was his name?
Uh-oh.
I got nothing.
Talladega Nights : The Legend of?
Nothing.
Ricky Bobby.
Mm.
Ricky Bobby. Number five, Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything.
Julie Newmar.
Correct. Number six, The Blank Affair.
Thomas Crown.
Correct. Number seven, : Mall Cop.
Paul Blart.
Number eight, The Three Burials of Blank.
Oh, it's some Spanish name. I don't know the name of it, though. it's definitely a Spanish name. I don't know what it is. Mm.
The Three Burials of Melquiades Estrada.
Yeah, there we go.
Number nine, Bring Me the Head of Blank.
Oh, I know this one. I can't think of it, but I know it. Because you're going to say it, I'm going to be like, oh, who was that?
Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia.
Yeah.
And finally, number 10, Dragon: The Blank Story.
Bruce Lee.
Bruce Lee is correct. So you got 7 out of 10. I thought you'd get Ricky Bobby.
Nah, I'm not the biggest fan of...
Will Ferrell?
Yeah.
Really? Will Ferrell to Adam McKay? That's the Will Ferrell-Adam McKay connection, too. That's like, for me, prime Will Ferrell. I mean, Will Ferrell's good.
He can be.
But Anchorman, Ricky Bobby, Step Brothers, and other guys.
That's a lot of John C. Reilly, too.
Yeah. Well, it's Adam McKay. He works with the same people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what's their next one they're doing? They're doing, I think they got something. They got something brewing. Adam McKay, that dude who did all that shit, is the one who helped rewrite the final version of the Ant-Man screenplay for Marvel.
Okay.
After Edgar Wright's version was rewritten by their internal guy.
Okay.
So it's like two steps removed from the Edgar Wright stuff. Anyway, okay. So let's, you know, let's do a little bit of, we'll do this. We'll do Billy D's Statue of Movies. Here we go. So glad you made it! I'm better than the last one! Hello, my dudes! That's how he starts.
What's up, Billy?
With an exclamation point, so that's why I had to read that kind of loud. Here at Billy D's Death at the Movies, we do some exhaustive research before viewing some titles and walk into others blind, which is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
This week was a revisit of a movie I walked into blind on a previous viewing. A movie I swore I would never watch again, but I did because I am not a smart man.
Oh, what did he see?
This is intriguing. The movie is Found. It doesn't star anyone of note that I can recall. It's a coming-of-age film, if you happen to be coming-of-age in a horror film universe where your older brother is the villain. Huh. The performances are top-notch, and the film is made very well. I'd almost appreciate something to make fun of, since this is one of the bleaker films I've seen in recent memory. It's a real day ruiner.
Sweet, I love those day ruiners.
I honestly say to stay away from this one, unless you think you can handle some serious depravity. Sometimes the body count at Death of the Movies is on the screen, and sometimes the death at the movies happens inside you. I'm gonna go call my brothers, Billy D. Very interesting. Very, very interesting there. Found. Haven't heard of it.
Apparently it's gonna make you die inside a little bit.
He didn't say where he saw it.
So it's a lot like Visitor Q, or perhaps maybe Little Children.
We talked about that. Yeah, Little Children.
I hate you. I hate you so much.
You want to tell that story real quick? Or?
Yeah, why not?
It's up to you. I wouldn't say the other person. Keep the other person out of it.
Okay. So the other person's going to be out of his totem.
Yeah, but there was another person there.
But let's just say one day Drew may or may not have had some spare hallucinogens around. And I may or may not have ingested them at the house.
Much earlier in the day.
Yeah, yeah. And
you weren't alone. You were with a friend.
No, yeah, yeah.
I don't want people to think you're some sort of crazy.
Yeah,
junkie.
No. It was like 11 o'clock, and I had some stuff sitting around, and me and my buddy were just kind of like, yeah, sure, why not?
You don't want to see what the stuff is? You just want to leave it out there?
Like, I had some old LSD in the freezer.
There's just some old LSD in the freezer. That's all.
From the
60s.
Old from like a couple months before. But anyway.
Was that the shit on the sugar cubes?
Yes.
I remember a sugar
cube. I had some liquid. It was awesome. So that day, you know, I dropped. I did my thing. Blah blah blah. Yada yada yada.
I didn't.
Mr. Crespo was at work all day.
Not my thing. I came home. I was like, "Hey, you fine?" And he was like, "Oh,
And then Chris was like, "Oh, there's this movie. It's really we should."
This was like later in the day. Too,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. We put in Little Children, then it got to a certain part of the movie. Chris was like, "Oh, I forgot about this part of the movie."
Like, oh yeah, this gets intense.
And I was under the influence of LSD, and let's just say it warped my mind permanently. Thanks, Chris.
See, there's a part in that movie where that movie is based on a book, and there's a voiceover in that movie where a guy uses a really what's that word? Sonatorial.
It's Rorschach.
Yeah, well, Rorschach's in the movie, but the guy doing the voiceover is like someone else completely. Not even a character in the movie. Mm-hmm. He's doing the omniscient voiceover.
Yeah.
And he's got the very specific sounding voice. And there's a scene where a character played by Night Owl from Watchmen.
Yes.
He's just coming home. He's supposed to be studying or whatever. He's wandering around. He sees some people playing touch football in the field. And it's like, oh, let me get in on it. So he starts playing with them. And then the voiceover guy starts talking about the game and describing the game. And it's totally 100% NFL films. It's like they're doing an NFL films package where it's like the biggest game, like the Ice Bowl, you know, the most epic thing ever. But it's a bunch of douchebag dads in the field neglecting their duties and playing football together. See, shit like that. I was like, oh, there's things like that. And Kate Winslet getting banged out.
Yeah.
Like, these are fun things. These guys will appreciate this movie.
And then
the movie gets crazy with the whole child molester angle and the mom that dies. And he's like, I just want to be a good boy.
And the diaper scene. Thanks, Chris. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks. I mean, the LSD didn't help, but thanks.
Yeah, it's an intense movie. Little Children. People, watch Little Children.
Not on LSD.
It's good. It's a good movie. That's the thing. It's a really good movie. It's really good. Okay. That was a tangent. Here we go. I got some questions. I got one question on Facebook and one on Twitter. This one is from this dude, Joseph Crespo. I think that's how you pronounce it.
I think he's your brother.
Oh, that's who it is. Okay. Thanks, Drew. He writes, yes! 2 exclamation points. This guy's excited.
What was the question? The answer apparently is yes.
I've just heard from a little birdie that the next actor to play the antagonist of Bond 24 may seriously be Christoph Waltz. And that is correct. Yeah. Christoph Waltz is in talks right now, officially, to play the villain in the next Bond. Brilliant choice, I may add.
Agreed.
I would agree. We both agree. If he, for some inexplicable reason, could not perform, is there any actor you would like to see fill in the role of the villain?
Ooh.
Actor. characters. Villains, you know, they've had some pretty good fucking, a nice run of villains. Especially if you put aside Quantum of Solace, I can't remember who the fuck. It was the dude, Almeric, the French guy. He's a good actor, yeah. But he didn't make for much of a villain. The movie sucked too. But,
Mads Mikkelsen
in Casino Royale. Over here in the Skyfall. Who was it? It was what's his name?
The dude from
Why is it all of a sudden escaping
with, the No Country for Old Men dude.
Anton Chigurh.
There we go.
The fucking Javier Bardem.
Yes.
When I started this sentence, I had Javier Bardem in my mind, and then it just flew out right of my ear. Javier Bardem, Mads Mikkelsen. I mean, those are some top notch ones. They're bringing Christoph Waltz, all his fucking charm,
yep,
that can be like so deceptively
evil.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He does that so well.
He does.
Great choice, I think. But if he can't perform, who could it be? You know who I'd like to see come back and give another shot? He was previously the youngest Bond villain ever, although he only played a henchman, yeah, not the main guy.
Mr. Del Toro.
He was in License to Kill as a henchman, but
well,
shit, man.
Whoever it is, they have to have a hint of class.
It helps.
All the Bond villains are very classy.
Yeah, they are. Even to the point where the one with the newspaper guy.
Yeah.
Like, come on, this guy runs a newspaper.
You know, seriously, give me some Ben Kingsley.
Ben Kingsley's good.
He's a great bad guy.
Great bad guy, for sure. Yeah, yeah, actually, he can do different types of bad guys.
And talking
too.
Class. Motherfucker's got class coming out.
He's got it.
Every orifice.
He's got it. He may be a little too old now, but Michael Caine?
No.
Michael Caine?
No, definitely not too old.
No, you don't think he's too old? No. He can still do it?
Yeah.
He was looking old in Interstellar, but they may have been trying to make him look old. That may have been that type of thing. But he was looking like, oh, Michael Caine. How much Michael Caine do we have left? the Liam Neesons.
The Neesons, yeah.
The Neesons would be a good villain.
Yeah.
Right? He's an intimidating dude, but also speaks in a way that, oh, this guy sounds like he could be smart.
Or you were saying earlier that Will Smith might have played a villain at one point in time, where he was in talks to play some villain in some movie.
Yeah, you know what? Will Smith has circled some interesting roles in his career, both villains and heroes, that he didn't bite on some of them. It is time.
So why not a Bond villain?
Bond
Will villain. Smith is a Bond villain.
Will Smith as a Bond villain would be very interesting.
And pretty fucking epic.
It could be. Guy can be really good. He can be great. Not a good choice. Why are we sticking with men? Where are the ladies at?
The femme fatales?
Yes. Give us a super strong, because the ladies in the James Bond world are always the ones that he ends up fucking. Like, they help, yep, a little bit, and then he fucks them, and then it's all Bond.
Yep.
Right? Unless you're Eva Green, then you backstab them too.
Yep.
Because that's what she does in movies.
Yes, she does.
You know, the best part of that god-awful abomination of a Catwoman movie was Sharon Stone.
Sharon Stone is a bad lady?
She was a bad guy in that movie. She was the main villain. I think she'd be good.
Yeah.
She could pull it off. Anyone else? Jessica Chastain. She's in everything.
I think Jessica Chastain's more of a Bond girl.
She'd be Bond girl.
Than the Bond villain.
She's got the Bond girl rack.
Exactly.
So she could be the Bond girl. Because that's what the Bond girl has to be reduced.
To tits.
To an object.
Yes, tits.
To tits. To the Ursula Andress, two strips of white cloth.
Correct.
Coming out of the water. With a gun strapped to her hip.
Yep.
Because she's a pair of tits that can also handle herself in a dangerous situation.
Yes.
Like a Halle Berry type of thing. Mm-hmm. Again, two strips of orange cloth.
Yes. And a gun.
Did she have a gun then? I think
maybe.
You were like, no.
A knife. I think she had a knife.
She had a knife in her butt. Gross. How about, why is it gotta be a lady or a dude?
What?
Why can't it be an animal? A CG animal. Giant talking monkey played by
Andy
Serkis. There you go. That's your Bond villain. Giant talking evil monkey. Mojo Jojo. From
Powerpuff Girls,
played by Andy Serkis, is your Bond villain. Let's see. And then over here on the Twitter, we got from our homie Rage Against Twit. Any interest in Eddie Murphy doing a drama?
A little.
And then he also gave us a link. Let's see what this link is. It's at Deadline.com. Britt Robertson joins Eddie Murphy in Cook. Britt Robertson is this little blonde girl. She's in the Tomorrowland movie that's coming out with George Clooney.
Okay.
She is the lead in this movie, Cook, which is the tale of a cook hired by a dying man to make meals for his girlfriend and his daughter after he passes. Eddie Murphy is set to play the cook, Henry Church, an artistic man who agrees to care for the dying Marie Brody and her daughter Charlotte for 6 months, only to end up ingraining their lives for the next 15 years. From the director of Driving Miss Daisy.
So, Driving Miss Daisy with a black cook as opposed to a black driver.
Yeah. He's going to somehow enrich their white lives. Hopefully, they're slightly
racist.
With
pork fat.
Yeah, hopefully they're slightly racist. He enriches their lives with pork fat.
Yeah.
And then at the end, they're slightly less racist.
And diabetic.
I'm sure he's going to be good. Do I have interest in seeing Eddie Murphy doing dramas? I absolutely do. I think Eddie Murphy, I mean, did you ever get to see Dreamgirls? You ever watch that one?
Never saw it.
He's really good. It's the Diana Ross story, you know, fictionalized, yeah. The whole Dreamgirls stage production. He plays a character that's like James Brown type of guy. So when he's on stage, he gets to do a lot of dancing. He's very flamboyant, but then backstage is very serious and intense. It's a smaller part in the movie, but he's really good in it. So there's no reason why Eddie Murphy can't do drama. You know what I'm saying? Okay, well, that's what we got for questions. Again, remember, people, you can hit us up on Twitter at Crespediso or email us at cinemacrespediso@gmail.com. All right, let's get into some movie news and we'll get out of here. The Universal Monsters. We've been talking about them before on the show. You got your Dracula, right?
Yes.
What else you got? You got your...
Mummy.
Mummy.
Frankenstein.
Frankenstein's monster. Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yes.
This is a big one. The Invisible Man.
Yes.
That was one of their originals. Is there any more? Anyway. Okay, no, I don't know what that guy is. What they're doing, Universal, they just had some big like round table discussion thing with the Hollywood Reporter, a bunch of studio execs.
Mm-hmm.
And Universal put out some stuff about what they're doing with the Universal Monsters. And pretty much they're rebooting all the movies, all the characters into new movies. All being done by this Alex Kurtzman guy who co-wrote the Transformers movies and the Star Trek movies.
Okay.
And they're kind of ditching the horror aspects, and they're turning these into action-adventure movies.
Because that worked so well for
Van Helsing.
And Dracula Untold.
Because those movies turned out so great.
Never saw Dracula Untold. Unfortunately, saw Van Helsing.
This is what we have to look forward to, dudes. This is what we have to look forward to. Here we go. This is from... It's via the Hollywood Reporter, but I'm getting this from Slash Film. The new Mummy movie to be directed by Alex Kurtzman is definitely action-adventure. But that... The Mummy movies... Okay.
They have been for a while now.
Yeah, the ones with Brendan Fraser.
No.
And they have the horror underpinnings, you know, with the curse
kind
and
of,
the
first one
the
was
sand
more,
monster.
The first one was more scary-ish.
Try to kind of go that route.
Yeah, and then I mean, those beetles were going inside of people.
Yeah, so there's horror elements to them, but they were still, at the end of the day...
It's an action-adventure
movie. So, Alex Kurtzman's doing a new Mummy. They're going to go that route again. Here's the actual quote from Universal that the head of Universal speaking, Donna Langley. We don't have any capes in our film library, meaning superhero movies.
Yeah.
But what we do have is an incredible legacy and history with the monster characters. We tried over the years to make monster movies, unsuccessfully actually, and we had an epiphany, which is that the horror genre has a ceiling. It's not global. There's a reason why monster characters are enduring generation upon generation. So we took a good hard look at it and we settled upon an idea, which is to take it out of the horror genre, put it in more in the action adventure genre, and make it present day, bringing these incredibly rich and complex characters into present day and reimagine them and reintroduce them to a contemporary audience. So that's how the head of Universal is approaching this.
And you know, that Frankenstein movie did so well too.
The one with
I Frankenstein.
See, that can't be. Was that Universal? I wonder if that was Universal. That was based
no
on
idea.
A comic book. I wonder if that was Universal. I forgot about that. We gotta watch it.
Aaron Eckhart versus Gargoyles.
Ooh, that looks so bad. He was like jump punching. He's like, ooh, jump punch. Oh my god. That looks so bad. That's where your monster movies are going, guys. So, I hope you don't like...
Monster movies.
Yeah, monster movies in a horror genre, because you're not getting... Fast and Furious. Furious 7, which is weird because Fast and Furious 6 was called Furious 6 in the movie, but if you look it up, promotional wise, it's Fast and Furious 6. which is strange. Because Fast 5 is Fast 5.
Yep. Then Fast and Furious 6, and now Furious 7.
The most infuriatingly titled series ever. Let's try to go over them. The Fast and the Furious.
Yes.
Is number one.
Too Fast, Too Furious.
Is number two. Is it The Fast and the Furious or Fast and Furious? I think it's The Fast and the Furious, colon, Tokyo Drift.
Three, yes, Tokyo Drift.
Then they start shortening them. Fast and Furious 4.
Yeah.
They drop the thuz.
Yeah.
Fast 5.
Yes.
I think the sixth one is officially Fast and Furious 6. But in the movie, at the end of the movie, the title card says Furious 6, which makes Fast 5 Furious 6. But now this one is definitively called
Furious 7.
Furious 7.
Like The Hateful Eight.
Like The Hateful Eight, but it's just the Furious 7. Well, I can't wait to see what they come up with 8, 9, and 10. Because there will be at least 3 more Fast and Furious movies.
God, so awful.
Again, this is from that round table that the Hollywood Reporter did. Donna Langley, Universal Pictures. She says, quote, "We think there's at least 3 more. I think it's still a growing franchise. We'll see what happens with Furious 7, obviously, but our box office has grown over the past 3 or 4 films, and internationally in particular. So we think that there's more to mine there, but we're, of course, very mindful about fatigue." So obviously, Universal sees dollars and cents.
Yes.
And they're like, why would we stop making these movies?
Well, they see dollars. They don't seem to know much sense.
Hey-o! What?
They see dollars, there are no cents.
Now, obviously, there's this whole thing with Paul Walker dying.
Yeah, it's kind of a big thing.
In a car wreck, of all things.
Uh-huh.
But they're like, you know what?
It's cool.
We're still going to keep making these fucking movies, man, because there's money to be made. Now, apparently, what's his name? The guy directing Furious 7 is James Wan. The guy who did Insidious, The Conjuring, the first Saw movie, made a lot of horror films. And he did Furious 7. Universal wants to crank out Furious 8, 9, and 10. They want to make these movies fast. James Wan is probably going to be busy doing The Conjuring 2.
Uh-huh.
So he won't be coming back. This might be a one-off for him. You know who may be coming back?
Who?
The guy who did Fast and Furious 3, 4, 5, and 6. Justin Lin.
All right.
He left to do Terminator. That never materialized. He looked at some other projects. I don't think he's doing anything at the moment. So he may come back.
He's
to
like, hey, what's up, guys? I'm back.
He may come back. So we'll see what happens with Furious 8. Chan-wook Park, director of Oldboy.
Mm-hmm.
Also, recently did his first English language movie, Stoker. Which you saw some of Stoker on the HBO. It's a good movie, gothic drama. Not great. It's not as good as Old Boy or even like Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance or Thirst. Thirst is so good. His vampire movie.
No.
Or his very first movie. I don't know if it's the very first one, but the first one I've seen. The JSA, Joint Security Area, which is about the friendship that develops between two soldiers on the demilitarized line in North and South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really, really good movie. And they've been talking about trying to remake it in America for years, but as a Mexican border dispute, and that just sounds terrible.
Yeah.
But this guy, Chan-wook Park, he's now looking at his second English language movie. And it sounds kind of interesting. It's a sci-fi thriller called Second Born. Variety reports that Second Born takes place in a futuristic world in which human consciousness is stored on neural microchip implants.
Sweet.
As a result of this technology, there's been a proliferation of black market body swapping.
Sweet.
The playlist adds that an early draft involved a murdered special agent who returns in another body to kill a bad guy, but they're not sure if the current iteration of the script still has that element.
Interesting.
So,
body swap.
Really wanted to bring this up just so I could bring up Chan-wook Park and tell people that haven't seen his movies, hey, check out
Chan-wook Park.
Chan-wook Park. Old Boy is obviously great.
So good.
Remember when I took you to see that one, Drew?
Oh, yeah. That was fucking awesome.
And that was one where it's like, what do you know about this movie?
Nothing.
Did you even know it was Korean?
No. Oh, subtitles. Here we go. Oh my God. What is that? What is... Excuse me.
Get to read and holy shit. I remember seeing that screening at the MZion. By that point, I had already seen the movie and I wanted to see it again. I had seen it on DVD, import DVD, but it was finally playing in the theater in town. So I wanted to see it in the theater. So I knew what was coming. And then I remember, like, off to the right, a couple seats up, there's this black dude, older black guy who's there by himself. And when the big reveal happens, and they go, you can hear in the theater, people are starting to realize, like, holy shit, that's what happens? He was like, I remember his reaction, like, oh my god. He was beside himself.
Oh no! Yeah, that was during the great Asian explosion.
Yeah.
Where I was watching a lot of Asian movies.
A lot of Japanese, a lot of Chinese movies, yeah. Had a big fascination with that at that time. Here we are with our obligatory update for Batman versus Superman
:
Dawn
of Justice.
Of Just Ice. Confirmation, pretty much, of two things. A, in Chicago, they dressed up part of a theater. Because they're spies. You know, there's people out there. They see, if they're shooting on location, out on the street, people are going to see them. They're going to report to see what's happening.
Yeah.
We call them spies. A theater in Chicago was dressed up to look like it was showing The Mask of Zorro.
Nice.
Why would they do that, Drew?
Because it's going to be in a movie.
Well, what's important? I'm trying to see if you can connect the dots here. In a Batman versus Superman movie, why would they have a theater showing The Mask of Zorro? What's the point of that? Where does that significance come in? That's the movie that the Waynes are coming out of. So we're going to get to see Bruce Wayne's parents killed again. Yay!
Just what I always wanted for, what, like the third or fourth time?
Oh, dude, the eighth or ninth time? Very recently I saw online someone put a video of all the times the Wayans were killed.
The Wayans?
The Wayans are alive, people. Relax. Damon's cool. Damon Jr.'s fine. Marlon, Sean, they're all good. We'll get White Chicks too. It's cool. The Wayans die like 8 or 9 times via cartoons, movies, and TV shows. And there's a video where it's like different boxes. Shows them all happening at the same time, like cut together. And it's like, damn, we watch this dude.
Yeah, his parents get murdered a lot.
We watch this dude watch his parents get killed a fucking lot. We're going to get to see it again. Not only are we going to get to see it in Batman versus Superman : Dawn of Justice Ice, we are going to get to see it shot on IMAX cameras on IMAX screens.
Sweet.
They've confirmed for sure they're using IMAX cameras on that set, and they're using it for that scene at the very least. So, biggest parent murder ever. Speaking of 70mm, Quentin Tarantino is getting in on the big screen game. He's doing Hateful Eight. Shooting it on 65mm.
Nice.
And it's going to be shown on 70. Here we go. So we got some. And also, he said this a few years ago. He confirmed again very recently. He's about to make his 10th film pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
After 10 films, he's done.
Oh, really? So it'll be his last one?
It'll be his last one. Hateful Eight, I think, is his 8th movie. Here we go. This is from Slash One. Actually, here's a quote from Tarantino. I don't believe you should stay on stage until people are begging you to get off. I like the idea of leaving them wanting a bit more. I do think directing is a young man's game, and I like the idea of an umbilical cord connection from my first to my last movie. I'm not trying to ridicule anyone who thinks differently, but I want to go out while I'm still hard. I like that. I will leave a 10-film filmography, and so I've got 2 more to go after this.
Nice.
Blah, 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 blah. And this is all for the Hateful Eight movie, which we talked before last week about the plot and the cast: Walton Goggins, Samuel Jackson, Kurt Russell, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Channing Tatum. Tarantino goes on to say, "It's not etched in stone, but that is the plan. If I get to the 10th, do a good job, and don't screw it up, well, that sounds like a good way to end the old career. If later on I come across a good movie, I won't not do it just because I said I wouldn't. But 10 and done, leaving them wanting more, that sounds right." So he gave himself an out.
Sounds nice.
And then here we go about the 70mm stuff. If we do our jobs right by making this film a 70mm event, we will remind people why this is something you can't see on television. This is an experience you can't have when you watch movies in your apartment, your man cave, or your iPhone or iPad. You'll see 24 frames per second play out. All these wonderfully painted pictures create the illusion of movement. I'm hoping it's going to stop the momentum of the digital stuff and that people will hopefully go, man, this is going to the movies and that is worth saving, and we need to see more of that.
We do. That's why we go to the movies.
Well, that's why we went and saw Interstellar, even though it was still a fucking IMAX dual digital projection.
Hey, we tried.
And then finally, Tarantino says, we're not doing the usual 70mm where you shoot 35mm and blow it up. We're shooting 65mm, which when you turn it into a print is 70mm. That's what Nolan did with the Dark Knight movies and Interstellar. Panavision is not only behind this movie, they look at it as a legacy. They are inventing a lot of the stuff we need, and this is being supervised by my three-time Oscar-winning cinematographer, Bob Richardson, who's back with me after Kill Bill, Inglourious Basterds, and Django Unchained. I couldn't do this if he wasn't in my corner. We are literally coming out with the biggest widescreen movie shot in the last 40 years.
Awesome.
He's going for epic.
I like.
Huge.
He does epic well.
So it looks like, Drew, we know what our next IMAX Point Orlando movie is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Hateful Eight.
Hateful Eight by Quentin Tarantino. We're going to leave off with this one. Early reviews, early buzz is out for Matthew Vaughn's Kingsman, The Secret Service.
Looks interesting.
Did you know it is an adaptation of a Mark Miller comic book?
Oh, I'll have to check it out.
Which then it makes sense. Matthew Vaughn doing another Mark Miller, because that's the guy who did Kick-Ass.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew Vaughn did Kick-Ass. Did this Kingsman comic. And now Matthew Vaughn has adapted it. This movie is set to come out here in our country February 13, 2015. Just had a preview screening.
How do you spell Miller? Is it M-I-L-L-E-R or A-R?
He's an A-R. He's an A-R guy. And I have here a series of tweets from people from the screening. Here we go. Let's see what this Kingsman movie is all about. If you don't know what we're talking about, go online, go to YouTube, and check out the trailer for Kingsman: The Secret Service. Actually looks pretty cool. Here we go. This is at Jamie_Graham9 wrote, so much verve and invention in Kingsman: The Secret Service. Like Bond's mischievous, foul-mouthed, psychotic cousin. He also wrote, one scene in Kingsman: The Secret Service is so energized, violent, and batshit crazy, I didn't know whether to cower or leap up and cheer.
Sounds awesome.
It does sound awesome. This is at Rawson Jones writes, saw the Kingsman Secret Service for a digital spy film tonight, introduced by director Matthew Vaughn. It's the film he's most proud of. If you enjoyed Kick-Ass, you'll love Kingsman Secret Service, an exhilarating, funny film with a distinctly British heart. Colin Firth and Taron Egerton, I think that's the main dude, are sublime. Hopefully Kingsman Secret Service isn't just the beginning, it's that kind of movie. Wow. That is some high praise. At Chris Hewitts writes on Twitter, Kingsman the Secret Service is a blast, audacious, hyper-violent, stylish, funny, and the work of an utter madman in the best possible way. Things happen in Kingsman that I've never seen before in a mainstream movie. It'll divide some people, but great to see risks this big. And yes, there's a Colin Firth action sequence that comes on like the whole of the raid meets the last 20 minutes of Brain Dead.
What?
Does it say?
That doesn't sound. No way.
Is it based on his comic book called The Secret Service?
It must be. It has to be.
Really? Guess who illustrated The Secret Service?
BKV. No, he doesn't draw.
You know his work.
Shepard Fairey.
In the comic book world.
In the comic book world. Alex Ross.
He did Watchmen.
Dan Gibbons.
Dave Gibbons.
Dave Gibbons. Dan Gibbons' brother, Dave.
Dave Gibbons was the artist on that.
Wow, that's intense.
Series.
Yeah, the guy
I actually want to check that out now.
And a couple more tweets here. This is from at Ben S. Travis. Kingsman by no means perfect, but the last third is just ridiculously entertaining. One scene is ridiculously jaw-droppingly violent.
I love it.
And Nick DeSemolina writes, well, Kingsman: The Secret Service is utterly demented, mostly in a good way. If you ever want to see Colin Firth go raid-style loco on a room full of people, squirt the free bird. This is the movie for you. So we got two references to the raid. One to the end of Brain Dead. And many references to it being violent, inventive, mischievous, insane. Pops up in there. So I'm looking forward to it. Should be a good one.
Oh, Michael Caine's in it.
Michael Caine is in it.
Yep.
With Colin Firth. And then, oh, and Mark Strong.
Yes.
Because, you know, he can't make a movie these days if he doesn't have a Mark Strong in it.
Correct. But yeah, it is. It's based on that. It's called The Secret Service. I'm going to have to check that out.
There you go. All right. If you want to know about more comic books that you're interested in, check out the Dr. Drew's Two Cents we just did a few days ago.
It's about comic books.
It's about comic books, but it's about very specific comic books. Not so many superhero ones and more the non-superhero type stuff. Definitely good shit. I suggest you check that out. So that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you, Drew, very much.
You're very welcome, sir.
Thank you guys for listening. We appreciate it. We'll be back next week with episode 98. It's going to be good times. And here we go. We are out of here.